Patriot Jay, my man. It's finally good to have you. Good to finally have you on, man. Hope you're doing all right.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely, man. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. I went on hiatus for a little bit on the podcast. I had some stuff going on, but I knew I definitely wanted to have you on. I recently got back on Twitter. I'm not that active on it, but I may not be. But I think it was last year sometime, or it may have been the beginning of this year, you followed me. And I went to your profile and I thought, well, this guy looks pretty interesting. So I Googled you. I didn't know who you were. You know, I Googled you and I was like, oh shit, I got to know more about this guy. So your Grifties video came up and nice. I watched that when it first came up. I said, okay, this guy's got a Hotep Nation toboggan on, A+. Yep. And then I listened to the song and I thought, okay, this beat sounds a lot like Kill Army. And I'm a big Kill Army fan, a big Wu-Tang fan. I grew up, you know, Wu-Tang raised me, you know, as they say. Nice. And I heard the beat and I was like, okay, I gotta connect with this guy. So, you know, I followed you back and, you know, and it went from there. And it's taken a long time for us to get something going, but I'm glad we finally did. So
here now.
Yeah, exactly. So for everyone who doesn't know who you are, just give me a background as detailed or brief as you want to.
Okay. I'm Patriot Jay, 24-year-old. I was born and raised in Southern California. I am a recent law school graduate in the process of becoming an attorney. I'm waiting for my bar results right now. I do a lot of tweeting and I do some rapping here and there. That's it.
Absolutely. That's excellent. So did you actually pass the bar?
I won't know until November, but I feel confident about it. I took it at the end of July, and so I graduated like it was May 20th, I think. So I took a weekend off, and then like the Monday after I graduated, I was studying like 8 hours a day up until the bar. So I feel like I put in the work. I think I did good.
Yeah, how many years is that in school?
It's a 3-year law school program and then 4 years undergraduate to get my bachelor's. So 7 total.
Jesus. So you like right out of high school, because you're 24, right?
Yep. So I graduated when I was 17, went to undergrad and then straight to law school. So I've been in school my entire life. This has been like, I haven't had any school to worry about for the past 2 weeks since I've taken the bar. And it's been the first time in my entire life, really. I'm not going back to school in the fall semester. This is like my life now. And it's pretty good.
Yeah. So you recently did a little, are you on tour? Is that what you're doing right now?
Yeah, dude. I'm taking a little post bar tour. It's a small tour. I'm doing 4 shows. So my first show was at my annual festival, Hots Gala, that I hold out in Palmdale, California, where I'm from. The second tour, the second date happens next Friday. I'm going to be in Vegas for the Hotep Nation weekend meetup. So they asked me to perform there. And then next month, September 23rd, I'll be in Midland, Texas for my buddy Ross Schumann City Council event. And then October 7th to the 10th, I'm performing in Miami at this thing called the American Priority Festival. So I'm looking forward to these next coming dates.
That's amazing, man. How long have you been rapping?
I recorded my first rap. It was probably 12 years ago, but I've been taking it more seriously, I would say, for about 4 or 5 years.
Okay. And you've done a couple of collaborations. So who are some of the artists you've collaborated? I know Zuby was one of them. So I'm pretty sure that was pretty pretty intense. So who are some of the collaborations you've done?
So I've worked with Zuby on a song with our buddy TV Impact. I did a couple songs with Bryson Gray. One song with Anomaly. I'm working on a song with Chandler Crump. I think that's it so far.
Okay. Who's some people you're trying to work with in the future?
I want to, I work with this talented brother named Griff. Griff kind of just came out of nowhere, but I want to work with, I guess, more rappers in the conservative hip hop scene. So there's like Forgiato Blow, DVS, Rocky Luciano. There's Carlos Rossi. I feel like we've got like a kind of a solid little section on the internet for like conservative hip hop. So I kind of want to just expand it and work with everybody in it.
Yeah, it looks like, because it's not a, it's becoming a big scene, but it hasn't been a big scene. And I think a lot of people have have kind of been a little bit apprehensive about, you know, because conservatives can get, you know, attacked. It can get pretty dangerous out there. And I guess I consider myself a conservative, but I'm more, my conservatism is more leave me the hell alone sort of thing.
Yeah.
So like I'm a capitalist, which means I like to make my money. And even though taxation is theft, I pay my rent.
Right.
And then the rest of my money, I decide what it goes to, because nobody else is going to decide. Just because you don't want to work doesn't mean we have to pay you. That's just,
yeah,
that's just that, you know, how it is. So I'm really, really, really old school conservative. I'm not too outspoken about it. I've never gotten too political on the podcast, but I got prepared to. That's why I asked you on. So I'm pretty sure you've gotten a good amount of hate for it, you know, because the thing about Black conservatives is there's a dichotomy, I guess you could say, with Black conservatives, because more exists than other people think. And Black conservatives have become sort of this anomaly, even though, you know, politics wasn't this dynamic for so long. It's like conservatism is a four-letter word now. It's a bad word. It's, you know, it's Nazi this, and, you know, like you said, you know, in previous interviews I've seen, you know, patriarchy this. We got this whole patriarchy thing going on. And the biggest problem right now that we have, and, you know, Malcolm X warned people about this, is the white liberal. And the white liberal is causing all of this uproar, because what they have to do is they have to put this shield in front of them, because they don't actually have a social justice shield of their own. And they go on social media, and all they can really do is pander to other races. They can't do anything else. There's, if you're white, and I mean, it's okay to respect the plight of minorities and, you know, things of that nature, but they get out there and it's almost like they're trying way too hard. It's like, what are you trying to prove? And, right, you know, why are you trying to prove it? So is the majority of the attacks that you receive coming from white liberals, or is it coming from, you know, all around?
I would say the worst of the attacks usually come from white liberals. I feel like I get it from like Black liberals or like other sides, but the most vitriolic attacks usually come from the white liberals. So like one time a white liberal sent an email to my school and the California bar with my tweets, trying to get me expelled and trying to get me like banned from the bar. And the funny thing is, she did it in the name of Black Lives Matter, because I was making like some anti-BLM jokes. So they were like, oh, this person is actively engaging in defrauding those who want to support Black Lives Matter. I believe it's racist. A lawyer shouldn't be like this, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, how are you as a white person going to try to attack me, a Black person going to law school, trying to better my life in the name of Black people? It just doesn't make any sense.
Right. It's just the whole trying too hard. The crazy thing about it is, you know, I always go back to this. None of this stuff was going on before, you know, circa June 2016. And when that came around, as soon as Trump opened his mouth,
oh man,
everything just, it was just a meltdown. It was a complete meltdown. And the white liberal jumped onto the they didn't even jump on the bandwagon. They created their own bandwagon, you know, and with a white liberal in front. And I've actually been attacked about this in the past. Well, you know, aren't you white? That's exactly what I'm talking about. I don't pander. I don't have to panic. Wait. You know, I've been attacked for, you know, being in alliance with the Hoteps, you know, because that somehow, because what happens is it goes so far this way and then it goes overboard and it's almost, it's like almost like an Ouroboros with snake swallowing his tongue. It just becomes, it's kind of difficult to explain, but So it's almost like people like the Hoteps and Black conservatives are being attacked for the things that the white liberals did in the past. So it's like the other day I posted something. I'm surprised I didn't get shut down. And I said that, you know, they want to segregate the unvaccinated from the vaccinated because they feel that the unvaccinated are spreading disease. I said, it's funny. That's exactly how white liberals thought about Black people during the civil rights, you know, 60 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know. A lot of people saw it and I don't know if they really knew what to do with it or, you know what, but I mean, I speak the truth from time to time. It's what I do, you know? And instead of, I've never been a liberal. I don't know what it's like. I can't imagine what it's like. I don't have the need to pander to other people. And I think people think that I pander to Blacks on the other side. Like I'm a reverse Candace Owens.
Right.
You know, like she, you know, she's, it's like, we get it, Candace, you love white people. And then they come at me with that. Hey, we get it, Jason, you love Black people. But it's just, I understand what's going on and the truth is always somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to look because you got a lot of conservatives that are way over there and you got a lot of liberals that are way over there and nobody just sees, you know, what's going on right there in the middle. And this is the biggest problem that we have in the country right now is nobody wants to work together. Politicians don't want to work together. They work for us. They're the only ones who come to work, get paid, and, you know, tell the boss what they're going to do. So I have to continue to pay you and you're not going to, like, you're going to tell me that you're going to shut me down. We're on the brink of mandating everything. I'm about to go to the store when I get off of this call with you and maybe they'll say, hey, where's your mask? Maybe they won't. I have not been wearing a mask anywhere. Like yeah. I live next door to Domino's, which is dangerous enough. It's like, you know, three times a week. I just walk next door. There's the Dollar General Express. It's posted all everywhere. I just don't do it.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm right there with you.
But getting down the rabbit hole, I mean, it looks like things are either never going to get better or they're going to get worse before they get better.
I think they'll get worse before they get better. I feel like that's just the nature of things. And I don't think this is the worst. I feel like it can take a turn, especially with, I guess the Dems in power so much, you know, they can scare people into doing anything. And right. We've seen it. And so I feel like they've got something left in their sleeves.
And the crazy thing is that people actually think that, you know, Nancy Pelosi standing outside of their apartment with handcuffs, ready to get them if they come out of there. Like I live in a really nice apartment complex. And I'll come out in the hall and people come out of their apartment with their mask on. It's like, bro, if it's in the hall, it's in your apartment. Like it's
right.
Just,
like,
you know, and I mean, and I saw something earlier today where it was Zach Small. Zach Small said it. He said, nobody, I can't remember what he said. It was on Twitter, but it was, nobody was this up in arms over the flu when the flu has been around this long. And, yeah. And you know, the C-19 has a higher survival rate than the regular flu. And it's like things mutate. You can still get things after the vaccine and they're treating this thing as if it's this brand new concept. And people will literally just fall in line with anything the government says. It's like, okay, You got the jab. You can take the mask off. What? We fucked up. You got to put
the
it back
science
on.
Changed.
Sorry.
The science changed. Evolved magically. Like
it changed. God sat this one out. You know, we had this whole let there be light thing and he determined all this stuff. And then, nope. We know better. And they said, okay, well, I guess I'll just put the thing back on then. And I don't understand. But at the same time, a lot of Americans, you know, people who vote Democrat don't really respect capitalism. It's like if you own a business, you're a capitalist right then and there. You don't want socialism. The last thing you want is socialism if you own a business. And they don't care. And I don't know where this mindset is coming from. I understand with celebrities because they get paid for it. Like, right. You know, everybody's like, well, where's the Republicans? they're getting paid by Democrats to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
How do you not see this? So I feel like Trump or one of his constituents, one of his family members will try to come back in 2024, but I feel like it's going to be way too late.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he comes back, but I don't know. Who knows what can happen in the next 3 years? Like, I mean, like, the world is crumbling around us. The Taliban's back in power. We don't have the freedom to do anything. And it hasn't even been a full year of a Joe Biden presidency. So things could get very dark. And what freaks me out the most this past year, I didn't realize how easily manipulated the population was. Like, I thought we were better than this. I thought more of us had the ability to think critically, but I guess not.
Yeah. I said something about that the other day. It's the dichotomy of freedom is that people have been free for so long. It's allowed them to get soft because they never had to fight for it. It was just given to them. So until we have to actually fight for it, we don't have tribalism anymore. We don't have a hierarchy anymore. And we're never up in defense. And it's the dichotomy of that. The sub dichotomy is that people think that the government's going to take care of them.
Right.
While at the same time, the government is literally trying to destroy them. And they think that, well, no, that's not the case. They're actually trying to take care of us, trying to keep us safe.
It's like a toxic relationship, man. It's
codependency. Yeah, exactly. And the whole mask wearing, and it's if you really fear, I get fear. I get it. I believe that your fears should propel you towards accomplishment, not, you know, a standstill. But
yeah,
they put the masks on and then they go out, and it's, you know, where's your mask? Well, I don't need one because you have one. I literally, that's my argument. I thank you for you wearing one. And I'm right. Assuming that if you are wearing one, you're vaccinated. You're vaccinated and you're wearing a mask. And I don't have to wear one thanks to you. So can I get my spaghetti and go the fuck home, you know, without you, you know? So if you're that scared, you know, stay home. And the argument is, well, I shouldn't have to stay home. You know what? Why does freedom of choice work on your end and not on mine?
Right.
So all the freedoms are out the window unless you pander to the government.
And I think it's funny how the vaccinated people are more scared than the unvaccinated people. Like, you would think that they've got vaccinated, so they're not afraid of anything. They thought that was their key to getting their life back, allegedly. But nope, they're still afraid, still in shambles, and still sucking up to the government, doing whatever the government tells them to do.
Exactly. And I had COVID. I know I did. My mother had it. She passed out in the hall. She was 70 years old. She called me up and she was like, guess what happened? I said, what? She said, I passed out in the hall. So I don't know what's going on, because she went to the doctor, and this was in 2019, before it even got over here.
Right.
And she got tested for everything. The doctor said, we don't know. We hope everything works out. Have a great day. Tested her for every strain, everything that ever happened. No idea. So, and my mother had breast cancer, heart attack, is so susceptible to respiratory infections and bronchitis. Yeah. She has bronchitis like every year. And thank God, has not died from this. And it's like, the damn thing has a 98% survival rate.
Right.
But that's how powerful propaganda is. And we get blamed for being like Hitler.
Yeah.
When conservatives just want to be left alone and go to the fucking grocery store. That's all we want to do.
Right.
Don't want to be hollered at.
Just how life was, I don't know, a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And you started out as a liberal.
Yes, sir.
You, because you know, they indoctrinate people to think, hey, this is what you should be.
I feel like it's almost the default setting if you're a young person, or if you're kind of like apolitical. Like, you don't know much about politics, but you definitely know that Republicans are old and racist, because, you know, that's what has been beaten down into our faces for our entire lives. So, like, when you're just getting started out, you're like, okay, I guess it makes sense. I want to help people. I'm a liberal, you know. I think the government should help people. It sounds great. It all sounds great. And it feels great, but none of it makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And you went to one of the most, it's one of the most liberal colleges ever, right? Cal State.
Yeah. I was at Cal State Northridge, surrounded by a bunch of liberals and commies. And fortunately for me, like, seeing that craziness kind of made me go the other way, and going to college is what turned me into a conservative.
Right. And you actually, at a very young age, you were part of you campaigned for Obama.
Yeah. During his 2008 campaign, I was like 11. I did some phone banking for him. I was volunteering. And then I even went to his first inauguration in 2009.
Wow. What was that like?
It was cool. Like, that was my first time in D.C. My dad took me out there for my birthday. The crowd was crazy. Like, it was packed, and it was just, it felt really nice to kind of be there. That was my first, I guess that was like my first political rally. Wow. Looking back at it. Cause like, even when I was campaigning, I didn't go to any like large events, but, yeah, it was a good time. It was a real good time for a 12-year-old.
What was the shifting point for you?
So I go to college, and I have to take my general education units or whatever. So I took this African-American studies course. It was like an African-American studies English course to fulfill my English requirements. And so I came out of that like hating America pretty much. And then the next semester I took Intro to Logic, and that was my first introduction into like formal critical thinking. I had never heard of a logical fallacy before that, or how to like properly form an argument. And so the logic course kind of opened me up to a new way of thinking. It said to me like, hey, maybe I can be more objective rather than subjective. Let me take my feelings out of the situation. Let me look at things like the average reasonable person would. And so kind of taking a step back, that allowed me to get a glance, and I wanted to check out both sides instead of just blindly giving my allegiance to one party. And so I checked out the Republicans and conservatism, and ultimately it just made more sense to me. I felt like we had common sense on our side. You know, I just want to be left alone. I don't want the government interfering in my life. I want to earn my own living on my own time. And that's why I was drawn to conservatism.
What are some of the things that, well, first of all, I have to ask you this, and this is an older inside joke. So some people will get this and some won't, but what made you decide to become America's first Black lawyer?
Yeah, I did political science at Cal State Northridge. That was my bachelor's degree. And it was always in the back of my head to go to law school. So around my senior year, I said, well, hey, if I'm going to graduate this year, I should probably start studying for the law school admissions test. So I just started to start studying. I decided to start studying for it. And then I applied to some schools and I got in. And I feel like the deciding factor for me was that I was going to be able to help a lot more people with a law degree than I would with a political science degree.
Yeah, that actually makes perfect sense. What are some of the things that you hope to bring to the table as a lawyer? Because I know you want to help people. Is there a certain demographic, or is it just what's the game changer for you?
So for me, I want to help the underserved communities, the people who don't have the resources to get knowledge of the law or to hire, you know, like the best lawyers. I want to kind of come in and be able to provide them like my expertise at an affordable rate. I think what stands me out, I'm a regular person. You know, I feel like when people think of lawyers, they think of these like big evil guys in suits. I'm going to be like, hey, like, no, I'm a real human being. I just so happen to be trained in the law, but here's how I can help you. And here's what I'm going to do for you. I think just being personable, really, because a lot of times you try to talk to these people, they're speaking at you in legal terms that you don't understand, or they're acting like they're better than you, or they just don't even want to give you the time of day. And I feel like I just want to try to come in and be, I guess, the people's lawyer.
Yeah, that's actually pretty admirable, actually. And you know, something else, and I saw a video from a girl yesterday. She was an attorney, and she left a high six-figure paying corporate job as an attorney, and her grandfather was in the hospital, and she was Asian, and Asians are all about family. Props to the yellow box. Stop Asian hate. Yeah. And she did not get to spend as much time as she wanted to with her grandfather, who was literally dying, because she kept getting hit with, what do you think we pay you for? What do you think we pay you for? What do you think we pay you
for? Right.
And, or what do you think we pay you so much for? That's what it was. Cause her, her whole, the whole video was about those 10 words. And she was like, fuck it, I'm out. Because, you know, he died. She didn't get to spend as much time with him as she wanted to. And she's got a bunch of different methods of passive income, but she also has a company where she basically teaches people about law.
Nice.
And it's pretty cool. It doesn't seem to be a political thing, because this is how I decide whether or not I follow people now. I go to their Instagram and I scroll down to June 2nd and I see if I see a black box. And if I see a black box, I don't follow. So I didn't see a whole lot.
Very good litmus test.
It's a good litmus test. And I didn't see, you know, anything else. But, you know, if you're an influencer and you're trying to make money and you're trying to survive and not be, you know, thrown to the wolves or whatever, you're going to post that black box and you're going to pander a little bit. But there wasn't a whole lot of it. But I think hers was more straightforward than game changing, just helping people understand, you know, the type of laws that are in effect and things like that. And honestly, I think that that's something that, you know, you can contribute and it could fall in line. You know, I don't believe in niching down, but so I think when you start to niche down too much, it gets a little bit boring.
Yeah.
But if you spread yourself too thin, you know, and you're multifaceted, because I mean, I have a lot of skills. Other people have a lot of skills. You know, many people have a lot of skills, but I think if you have a duality, it actually, it's a really good social media thing. And I think that would be something, you know, good for you to do in the future, because in the past we have just so much normality out there. Everything is just normal. Everything is either normal or it's vapid. It's, you know, it's whatever. But I think that would be a good thing to add to your network, because people don't expect that from a guy who does hip hop, you know,
right?
Especially from a guy who does hip hop and has a lot of profanity in his hip hop, you know, because, you know, profanity is useful. And a lot of times it's like, I love the Don Lemon song. I just listen to that. And I'm like, if Fuck Don Lemon are the only lyrics in this, I'm still going to amp this up. Open my windows. And I'm in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina, where nine out of 10 people are wearing masks. And I know they're probably liberal. I'm gonna let them hear it. So I'm gonna bump this as loud as I possibly can. But is that something you would be interested in doing, just to help people? Just to help people get a more broad understanding about, you know, laws and things of that nature.
Yeah, definitely. I had, that's something I kind of always thought about too, but I didn't ever want to start it up while I was in school, because I just felt like I didn't really have the full expertise and breadth yet. So definitely, like, as I get more experience and actually have practical, like, cases to deal with, you know, I feel like I'll definitely do something like that down the line. And I feel like, law school laws are different from like real life laws sometimes. So you learn like the common law, which is like just historical court rulings for a subject, but you might actually, like, California has a different set of, I guess, criminal laws than what we learned in criminal law course. You know, things have been modified by the state. So it's like, I still need to do my due diligence and research into the particular state laws as well.
Okay. So once you find out that you passed the bar, and then I know for a fact you did, where do you go from there?
Me and a buddy are planning on starting a small criminal defense practice out in Los Angeles. Oh, so we're going to just try to take our talents straight to the people, get some clients, and get some hard experience.
That sounds like a good idea. So do you have any... I guess you could call it doubts going forward, because you are so young and people may not take you seriously.
No, not at all. I feel like because I'm so young, I can do like I can do anything I want. And I feel like I'm confident in my skills. I don't think somebody's going to kind of brush me off just because I'm young. And even if they brush me off, I still know more about the law than they do. They would like need me for their services. I don't think my value decreases because of my age at all.
Right. So outside of hip hop and attorney related endeavors, what else you got going on?
That's been it pretty much. I was in school for like what seemed like forever. So it was law. And I barely had time to, I guess, focus on hip hop. Well, it was only because of the pandemic, really, that I had time to like sit and write an album. So when the pandemic hit, I was alone in a one bedroom apartment. I was out in DC, so I had like a couple people, but that was it. I wasn't close like where I was back home. So I just wrote a bunch of music. And now that I don't have, I guess, the bar to study for or law school finals to study for, I just want to focus on making music right now. I want to write. I want to take this time in between the bar while I'm waiting for the results back to kind of just create some more raps.
Do you think you can reach more people through your music than you can just regular campaigning?
Yeah, I think so for sure. Because I feel like music is more universal.
Yeah. How do you feel about if things aren't, you know, completely burned to the ground in 2024? Do you think you would get involved in that as far as, you know, from a campaign perspective? Do you think you would get involved in that again?
Yeah, I think I would do something like that because campaign work is fun. I worked on a 2018 campaign. And so I feel like maybe in the next cycle, I might be able to contribute more because I'm like legally trained or something. So I might get into like the nitty gritty of like campaign laws and stuff like that. So I wouldn't rule that out.
So the thing that gets me right now is that everything is almost where people just have complete blinders on, you know, and no matter how much prominent and truthful information that is being put out there, people just refuse to listen to it. They just will not listen to the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. It's almost as though they, you know, they see, we get what you're saying, but we don't like this person. So we're just going to go with, you know,
yeah,
we're going to go with this. So what do you think it's going to take, no matter how extreme it needs to be, to get people to really realize what's going on? Or do you think they're just so far gone that there's nothing that can happen?
I think it takes just actually talking to these people who are so far gone. So instead of like, I don't know, sending people a link to check out, I think we need to have more conversations and just say like, hey, this is what I know, blah, 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 blah. It's different from your worldview. I believe I'm right. I think once you put these ideas in these people's faces, they can't help but to see the common sense in them. Whereas if you like send them a link to somebody, they might brush it off, like you said, and be like, oh, well, I hate this guy, I'm not going to watch it. But if they know you, if you're like a friend to them, you can kind of come to them one-on-one, talk to them, let them know how you feel and try to change their mind. I think it's just going to take talking to the other side more, because that's, I feel like, if at least for me, like that's been more effective than like sending a little infographic or like saying, hey, check this out, like actually talking to people. Because I've had so many people tell me like, oh, well, you're the first Trump supporter that I've actually spoken to, and I see why you like support him, or I see why you believe the way you do. And it's like, wow, who have you been talking to for the past, like, I don't know, year or so? Like we're all over the place. You know, there's 80 million of us.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to touch on earlier, is that, you know, it's, I come from a town, a very small town of, it was 60% Black. And back then, pretty much all of them were, this was before I knew anything about politics. I would wager to say that the majority of them were Republican. Everybody got along, you know, I mean, I'm on the opposite end of the fence. I actually got bullied by black people. Ooh, oh my God. who'd have thought that, you know?
Right.
I actually got bullied for being white. Who'd have thought that, you know? Probably thought I was a Nazi, but, I mean,
you do got the skinhead vibes.
I do have the skinhead, but I've actually had people ask me if I was a skinhead, and it's like,
no, for real.
I started losing my hair at 18. It's like, this is not a choice. Trust me. I would have a full hair, head of hair. I'd be like Bruce Wayne, seriously. But, yeah, it seems like a lot of them are still closet about it because they're afraid of getting attacked.
Oh yeah.
And that's the thing that kind of, I guess you could say, frightens me about my conservative friends. So I'm getting out there because, you know, you have a platform. All right. Like guys, like you have a platform, you know, you've created your own platform. You're not afraid to speak out about it. And the whole, because, you know, crazy liberals sit and wait like cheetahs, and they just wait for you out there eating the grass, and they pounce because
say the wrong thing. I dare you.
Right. And they pounce in groups because, you know, they can't do it one-on-one because they're not, you know, they don't lift weights, you know, there's that, you know, but do you ever feel like, do you feel like it's a better choice to actually go to the places where you're more prone to be attacked? I guess what I'm asking is, do you think it's better to take the risk because of the way things are now? Because things are so far gone. It's not like it was 4 years ago when it just started.
Yeah.
You know, after the fat white women started burning down Wendy's, it all went downhill from there.
Yeah.
And do you think it's even really worth it to get so, I guess the word is controversial, because we're controversial now. We're the controversial ones. It's not them anymore. Do you think it's even worth it to even get out there and get, but so controversial about this? Or do you think it's better to actually be precautious and pick and choose your battles?
I would say it's probably wiser to be cautious about it, to pick and choose your battles. But for me personally, like I don't care. And so I think less people should care. I feel like more people should become outspoken, because that's the only way we're going to change these things. Like, I know there are so many people who are, I guess, upset about cancel culture, but then they're afraid of it at the same time. But if we all kind of just said like, okay, cancel me, so what? Like, I'm here and I'm outspoken about it. It loses its power. So I feel like the more you give credence to it, the more stronger it becomes. So I think we need to kind of just say like, F it. Let me get out here. Let me speak my mind. I don't care of the repercussions, and I'm just going to be fine with it.
Yeah. You know, as far as everything going on in Afghanistan and, you know, everything going on here on our own soil, do you really think that, because it still hasn't gotten that, the worst thing about it is, wear a mask at some places and Margaret might yell at you. You know, that's kind of how bad it's gotten. It's actually, I don't see a whole lot. I see some, because, you know, I'm downtown Raleigh, so I see a lot of protests, I see a whole lot of that kind of stuff. They have no idea what they're protesting, but they're doing it.
Right.
And, you know, the cops let them, the cops are there. Nobody's attacking anybody. There's not anything, you know, really wild going on. But do you really see it going next level and all of America just becoming one big Portland?
I really hope not, but I mean, I think you could definitely get there. I feel like what scares me the most is the vaccine passport idea of having to like scan a QR code before you enter any single indoor building like that. If that happens nationwide, then I think we're done. So I think we need to kind of stand up and fight out against that. I feel like if we can successfully deter that, then we might not become a huge Portland. But I feel like once they get that, once they have like, I don't know, the legal precedent behind that, I feel like it's a wrap.
Do you think it's really going to happen though? Like the actual mandating of that, like an actual, I'm not even going to say mandate, because a mandate is not a law, but an actual law.
It might, because I know they're trying to do it in New York City, and then I think Los Angeles is talking about doing something like that. So once, I feel like NYC and LA are the two big liberal hubs. Once they get that, the lesser liberal cities will follow, and then the smaller liberal cities will follow, and then next thing you know, the conservatives are like, well, why don't you just show your passport? It's no big deal.
Right, exactly. What part of Cali are you in?
I'm in Southern California, and Palmdale specifically. It's like an hour outside of Los Angeles. It's northern Los Angeles County.
Okay. Are you planning to haul ass? Or are you going to stay there?
I'm going to stay here. Gotta make California great again. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful state, just overrun with, I guess, terrible politicians and regulators.
Yeah, it's kind of like certain places.
Yeah.
I'm headed out to, I don't know if you know who Bedros Koulian is. He's a personal development guy. I hate personal development, but because it's just a bunch of people recycling old, you know, Greek philosophers and Stoics and stuff like, oh, wake up early, and if you're weak, you're not strong. That really got 8,000 likes. Fuck, man. But I'm headed out to Chino Hills at the end of August, so September 1st, I'm going to interview him. He's the CEO of Fit Body Bootcamp, and I've been the head coach at the Fit Body Bootcamp here as my side gig. I work in the finance industry, but I do that. I've been a coach for 15 years, so I'm going to head out there and interview him. And I was going to have him on here like this. And his assistant was like, why don't you just fly out and just use our studio and our crew and just bring a hard drive and you can edit. I'm like, holy hell. Yeah. I'll take this podcast to the next level. Fuck yeah.
Right.
And he's been on Fox News. I mean, he's very outspoken, very conservative. He's an Armenian immigrant, but he says, you know, I refuse to leave. He said, Newsom's a fucking idiot, but you know what? You can't run away from the problems.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, if you want to stay where you're at, then you stand your ground and you stay where you're at. You know, because North Carolina's blue. I'm not going anywhere. I'm eyeballing a piece of land 4 hours away in the mountains. I want to live in the mountains. I'm going to live in North Carolina. Right. I mean, could I go to South Carolina where it's kind of red? Could I go to Florida? Sure. I want to fucking land in Florida. I want to be in the North Carolina mountains, you know?
Exactly. And then what happens when you run to another state and then the same problem happens 10 years down the line and you're like, oh no, I just have to run again.
Right.
You're running your whole life across the United States because you didn't want to stand up and say, hey, no, this is my homeland. I'm sticking here and I'm going to fight for it.
Exactly. And that's the biggest problem we have right now, because what stands between us and the barbarians at the gate is these weak ass dudes who are not going to stand up for anything. I mean, it's like, I'm not a big manosphere guy. I think the manosphere is a bunch of, it's predominantly a bunch of guys who are black pilled, pretending to be red pilled, pretending to not be blue pilled, that sort of thing. And I just don't see where there's a whole lot of online talking. It's just a bunch of talking. And you go on Instagram and you see these guys like, men are supposed to be violent. You know, the guys who worship Jack Donovan. And I like Jack Donovan. He's a buddy of mine. And, you know, it's like, you know, men are supposed to be violent, supposed to fight. It's like, dude, you work at Walmart.
I mean, right.
I haven't seen you in the cage. I haven't seen you out in the woods. I haven't seen you doing any of this kind of stuff. I haven't seen you, you know, killing deer and then tearing it apart and cooking it all on the stove. I haven't seen any of this stuff. And the problem is right now is that that's exactly what we have. We have guys who are either running from the problems or just staying here and not doing anything about it. Yeah. And getting kind of off topic, you know, because, you know, you're a male. I'm not trying to assume your gender, dude. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to assume your gender, but you know, you're a male. And if you had advice for guys, and this is really good for guys who are trying to become, what's that word when someone has fell on hard times and is trying to get back?
downtrodden.
When a guy comes out of prison and he's trying to get his life right, he's trying to get reformed. He's trying to get reformed, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're probably gonna run into a lot of that too. Because I think you would be a great candidate for somebody who, since they know the law, they could act as almost a counselor, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because I think attorneys need to do that, because when somebody's walking into an orange suit, you know, shackled up, and they come in and they're like, oh my God, everybody's going to be against me, yada, yada, yada. And you got to represent somebody like that. It becomes a pretty crappy situation. But what would your advice be? Because I don't coach women. I don't empower women, because I don't know how. I don't have the right to.
Right.
It's not my thing. But what would your advice be to men right now going forward? Because, you know, we don't have tribes. We don't have a hierarchy. We don't have initiation rituals for boys. We don't have that whole Spartan thing of, here's your stick, see you in a week. I know it's cold outside, but when you get back, bring some meat, that sort of thing. We don't have that anymore. What would your advice be for not only young men, but older men, you know, who have experience going forward now? Because, you know, we alone can't just overthrow everything that's going on right now.
Yeah.
So from a quote unquote personal development standpoint, what would your advice be to young and older males?
Okay. First things first, I would say read. Reading is so important. I feel like, what I'm going to say too is just stuff that's worked for me. You know, I can only speak on personal experience. So you got to read, just to kind of broaden your horizons. The more you read, the more you learn, the more you learn, the more you can think, the more you think, the more you can do. So you got to read, whether it's like, I guess, self-help stuff or just straight up like works of fiction. You just got to read, because reading is important. Then you have to you got to stop reading. You got to take a little action. You got to figure out what you want your life to be about. I feel like everybody's here for a particular reason. I couldn't tell you anybody's reason, because the reason comes from within yourself. You have to kind of do a little reflection and think, like, what do I want my life to mean? What would I be willing to stand for? What would I be willing to die for? And how do I want my legacy to, I guess, what do I want my legacy to be? And so that's, it's going to take some work to figure that out. You have to kind of reflect on that for a second. And then after you do that, I would say it's important to kind of, I guess, write out some steps, you know, say like, okay, I got this goal, long-term goal or short-term goal. Like, how am I going to get there? You got to figure out the steps you have to take to get there. And then once you have your eyes on the goal and the vision and what you want to accomplish, you just can't let anybody deter you from making that happen. And I think that, I feel like anything that you want to achieve is attainable, so long as you are focused on it and you don't let anybody stray you away and you don't give up. It's important not to give up, because if you give up, you're never going to reach your goal. I think if you keep going, you are eventually going to reach your goal, whether it's on the timeline that you wanted it to or whether it's a little delayed. But as long as you keep going, you're never going to not reach it, unless it's like, I don't know, physically impossible.
Yeah. And you know what? I like to ask my guests this. What are some of the most life-changing books that you've read?
Andrew Breitbart's Righteous Indignation was a good one for me, because it taught me to, I guess, be more outspoken and vocal and enter the culture war. Don't kind of stray from that. Mike Cernovich's Guerrilla Mindset was really good for me. I feel like that book helps me just, I guess, be more mindful and live in the present. It's important to live in the present, because you don't, like, your past and future worries, they're just worries. Like, it hasn't happened yet, or it already happened, and the only thing we have is right now. Gary Allen's None Dare Call It Conspiracy was a good one for me. That kind of, lifted the curtains, allowed me to kind of see what's going on at the higher levels of this reality. There's a really good book I'm reading right now. It's The 12 Universal Laws of Success. I'm like 3/4 of the way finished with that, and that so far has been really good. It's kind of it's given me like tangible steps to take and kind of ways to self-assess. And I think that's it. Yeah.
Cool. So before we wrap up, I want to say this. When Hotep Jesus was on my podcast, I asked him if he was done with hip hop and he said no. So can we expect a collaboration?
Uh-oh. Shoot. I didn't know he was still writing. Maybe, man, because I'm performing at his event next weekend. So I don't know. Who knows what can happen? Maybe I'll get him on stage. Exactly. Do a couple of songs or something.
I would love to see that. Yeah. I was talking to him about it, and he says, you know, you never really give up on it, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. Like, if you love the craft, you're not just gonna stop one day. I mean, like, you always have the love for it. And I feel like that's what separates me from a lot of, like, I guess people locally that I know. Like, for them, it was just a trend, you know, they just wanted to rap because it was hot. But I rap because it's a way for me to express myself. And I would rap if I didn't have this platform that I have right now. I would still be rapping, because when I didn't have the platform, I was still rapping. And even when the platform goes away one day in the future, like, I'll still be rapping, just because it's what I like and it's what I'm into and it's how I express myself.
Yeah, that kind of falls in line with a lot of people who chase money instead of chasing problems. If you chase the problems, the money comes on its own.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to monetize something, if you're trying to monetize a hobby, but it's not solving problems, then you're not going to get monetized. You know, and monetization doesn't necessarily have to mean currency. You know, it can mean, you know, listenership and that sort of stuff. So, I can totally respect that, because, you know, it's, if you have a gift, you do it no matter what. No matter, you get canceled, you get shut out, you get shut down, you know, whatever. Yeah. You keep doing it. Just like you said, you just keep doing. Don't let anybody tell you can't do it. Let anybody try to shut you down. Keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. And then, you know, nothing but good can come of it. Yep. And, you know, I would also collaborate with y'all. I spit a little bit.
Oh, bet.
I'm kind of like the albino Sticky from Onyx. I'm the guy that comes in at the end throwing shit and hollering and like pushing trash cans over and, you know, kicking stuff over and stuff and stuff. So yeah, we'll definitely get something together. But
I bring that energy. Hell yeah.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. I want to thank you for doing this. Been wanting to talk to you for a long time.
No problem, man. Thank you for inviting me. I had a great conversation.
Absolutely. And I wish you nothing but the best going forward. And I hope we can do it again in the future. I expect to see some great things from you, and I'm hoping but nothing from the best from your results in November, man.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I will talk to you soon. And this is Jason the Argonaut. This has been the re-debut of Mission is Legacy. Y'all take care.
Give an Oscar to these people because they acting. Move different in this town. When these people come around, they'll shut your ass down for the wrong view. They gon' make sure you conform, mask you up and make you whores. They'll take your firstborn. What we gon' do and what we gon' do is fucking up my whole mood. A white girl sent an email to my old school. She tried to cancel me and slander me with old news, all because I made a joke I once supposed to.